Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 757. This is your host, Danny, and joining me this week, we're here, all of us, finally. It took us a while. The whole Gamertag Radio crew. Let's start with Pete.
Yo, what's going on, man? Yo, what up?
What's up?
How you doing?
How's everything, man?
Doing all right. Undergoing some technical difficulties, but we will flourish. We will be okay.
Yeah.
The PC life.
PC mastery,
the PC life is a little difficult sometimes. But yeah, I'm dealing, man. I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
Good, man. And also we have Paris here. Paris, welcome back.
Hey, what's up, man? Thank you for having me back. Back from my trip to Florida, and I've now seen Infinity War, so you guys can spoil away because I've been to the mountaintop twice. I'm good.
I'm not gonna spoil anything, but that I left the theater with so many freaking questions. I'm like, wow, it was so good. It was so good. They pulled it off. They pulled it off, man. So many characters. Usually it might seem like very rushed, but this one, I think it was perfect. Like the way how that managed to have like different stories within the movie, you know, it was good. Liked it. Really cool.
100%.
Yeah. All right. So by the way, shout out to a bunch of folks from the GTR community got to go with Paris, who actually seen the movie, right? That was cool.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people showed up, but.
Yeah, we did a meetup yesterday in Irvine at the Spectrum in Irvine, and a bunch of folks showed up, and we all watched Infinity War together, and it was great because some people did see it, and then about half the people didn't see it, so we didn't talk about anything before, so it was just great seeing those initial reactions with me knowing what was coming, you know, in the movie. Yeah. And people just walking out just confused and mouth just hanging like, wait, what did I just see? What just happened? You know, it was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
Dope. All right, man. So head over to GamertagRadio.com. Post your comments and feedback. Make sure to subscribe, follow us, share it. Share it with your friends. Let them know about GTR. You can also find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and other podcast directories.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so E3 is coming up.
I'm going to cut you off because...
You're going to cut me off?
Yeah, because last episode, you didn't mention something. You guys didn't mention something which I thought you were going to mention, and the Twitch chat just reminded me of that. So last week, you know, Bungie had their Twitch stream to show off the new DLC that was coming on May 8th. And Deej mentioned us. He mentioned us on the podcast, on the stream twice. You guys didn't even bring it up. He gave us a shout out, which I thought was
dope. Cool. That was dope of him, man.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. And it's great because a lot of people are hitting you up. Like, Paris, oh, I see Mr. Famous Paris, you know, Deej shouting you out, not once, but twice on Twitch.
No, it was cool. It was cool. But the way that whole thing went down was he had tweeted about something about the reveal or whatever. And I just responded to him and I just basically said, hey, here's what I think the community, this is all the community wants. We just want compelling things to do in the game and we want earn challenges, you know, in the end game. I mean, to whatever, to that effect is what I said. And then he hit me up and he was like, can I use that? And I was like, absolutely, you can use it. And I didn't think anything of it after that. And sure enough, he literally kicked off the stream using that. So I thought that was pretty cool. Yep. And yeah, I mean, as far as just that goes with Destiny and whatever, I mean, the Warmind stuff looks interesting. It's not going to be the end all be all to fix the game. That'll come later in September from what everyone that went to that community summit got to see and what they've been saying. They're obviously under NDA, so we don't know exactly. But I would assume at E3, we'll get our chance to see what that is and probably get some hands-on with it and get a chance to talk to Bungie for ourselves. So that was cool. So I just shout out to Deej. I appreciate him giving GTR a shout out for that. And looking forward to what they got coming in the fall.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely. All right, so let's go with the first topic here. You know, E3 is coming up, and the scary part of E3 is that, you know, last year I went to the Nintendo booth, and the place was slammed. So many people were there playing, you know, Nintendo Switch and all this stuff, right? So this time, Nintendo announced that publicly, people that are attending E3, they could actually play Smash Brothers for Nintendo, Nintendo Switch. I know that happened because I was playing Super Nintendo earlier. So yeah, they're gonna have a demo open to the public, and it's gonna be playable at E3. Man, I think that place is gonna be a zoo. You know, that's the game. There's already, everybody knows it's been announced and everything, right? We don't know anything about Pokemon, Metroid, all these other surprises, and maybe they'll announce it and they will also have it playable over there at E3, man. But I think their focus is going to be, for now, is, you know, Smash Brothers. And what are your thoughts about this, guys?
I'm going to completely ignore the Nintendo booth this year at E3.
It's going to be a hot mess. Exactly. I'm telling you. It's going to be a hot mess. Unless we have an appointment that we could go, you know, behind closed doors and actually play, because that's what we did last year. But Pete, right? It took us forever just to get inside, man.
Yes, it took us forever. But once we were inside, we actually, because we got the guided booth tour, it made things a lot easier, where we didn't have to worry about the huddled masses, you know, all clamoring over stuff. We were actually brought upstairs to a separate area, and we could go from booth to booth checking out all of the new games. With Super Smash Brothers, though, I think it's going to be double the fun, but double the fury, because you're going to have everybody clamoring to get their hands on that title. And to be honest, unless we get that same opportunity again this year coming up, which I hope we do, obviously, I'm steering clear of that entire Nintendo booth, because if last year was any sign, with them literally having a line out the door of the facility for the entire day, and just everybody wanting to crowd around and see video and just watch it, if anything, I'm not even going to bother. You know that place is going to be a madhouse. It's going to be a zoo.
Yeah, and they're also going to have a Splatoon competition, like a Splatoon tournament there at the same booth. Which so a combination of that, because that's the thing that happened last year. They had a lot of people that were watching the esports tournament there, right? And, you know, now that they're adding Smash Brothers there, and who knows if we ever get to see like a demo for Pokemon and maybe Metroid at their booth. Yo, if they have all that stuff there for the games that's coming out this year, that's big. But yeah, I'm gonna try to stay away from that area.
And on the converse, that's great for Nintendo, because that, you know, that's just gonna make them the shining star of the convention. You know, that's great for them, because they can command that type of presence with every, you know, because it's not just, you know, the media, or, you know, it's not just industry people that want to go see it. It's going to be the public. And with the public coming this year again, that place, it's good and bad for them, because their booth is going to be that much more packed. I'm curious now, because of, you know, certain companies breaking off and not going to E3 anymore, does that mean that they're going to maybe have a larger presence to support a larger crowd?
No, I think they're going to have the same size, the same size from last year. I don't see them making it bigger because of that. Mm. You know, now, unless ESA start charging companies cheaper, like a cheaper price to have their booth there for them not to leave, maybe that's possible. But most likely it's not going to change. For this year, no.
Yeah, I don't see them charging less. I don't see that happening.
No, because the city of LA is pretty expensive over there, man. It's very, very expensive. And plus labor unions, it's like a bunch of stuff, man. Mm-hmm. So Paris, your thoughts, man, about, you know, Smash Brothers demo available at E3 this year, man.
I mean, it's pretty much what you guys have been saying already. I just expect that to be an absolute zoo. It's not something that I'm going to want to go actually attempt to stand in line to be able to participate in, because I mean, you're probably looking at 3-4 hours just standing in line to be able to play the game. What, for like 5-10 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, at a time.
Yeah, yeah.
This, mm-hmm. again, I'm not going to revisit all my thoughts on E3 and the public and all that, but this type of thing pretty much sums it up. We're not going to, unless we have a specific appointment at a specific time that we can just go in and get hands on and do it ourselves, we're not going to be able to even sniff Smash Brothers at E3, because it's going to be virtually impossible, because the public's going to be there. The media's going to be trying to, it's going to be a zoo.
Yeah. Yeah. But we'll see. We're going to try our best to see if we could cover it and, you know, talk about the game during E3 and stuff. 100%. So we'll see. Now, you know, I got to, you know, shout out to Michael Pachter. Actually, I got to hit him up to see what's their plans for this year at E3 and stuff. But I know, you know, usually a lot of the media is always hitting him up like, hey, you know, your thoughts about certain games and everything, you know, once it gets closer to E3. And here's a quote from him. He says that Detroit Become Human will sell around 3 to 4 million copies, says Michael Pachter. Do you see that? Possible that this game will sell 3 to 4 million copies.
It's possible. I mean, just do the math on the number of PlayStations out there versus saying only, you know, what do you say, 3 to 4 million? It's actually a small percentage of the PlayStation population that you're asking to pick that game up. So it's not the craziest thing in the world to think that it could sell that amount. My personal opinion, because I know that, you know, the demo's been out, mm-hmm. there's been some hands-on with it. It's been getting mixed reviews. I've always been skeptical on it anyways. Like I said, possible, realistic. I'm actually going to say no. I'm going to say it's going to sell under that personally. I don't think it's going to review that well. And I think the word of mouth is going to get around about that. And it's not going to be, let's put it this way. It's not going to be God of War. It's not going to get praise.
No, hell
like that.
No.
You know, it's probably just going to get average reviews. And I don't think a lot of people are going to pick it up right away. I think, again, being a single player experience, people probably wait it out, wait till it's discounted before they go pick it up. I don't see this selling a lot at $60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't see this game selling 3 to 4 million. I can see, you know, with games that if Sony's promoting a game a lot, like, you know, God of War, Spider-Man, even Horizon, all that stuff, right? Like, when I see that, okay, I can see the game selling that amount. But for some reason, I really don't see Sony pushing this game like the other ones. So how the game is going to sell 3 to 4 million, that's a big question. Now that you said that it's getting mixed reviews, the demo, man, yeah, I don't see it. I don't see that at all.
Trying to put it within, or trying to compare it to having a, you know, like a God of War type sales, I think is unfair to Detroit. Like Paris said, you know,
I'm not saying it's going to do God of War.
Oh, I know that. I think that's a given.
I'm going by what Pachter's saying. Right. I don't even think it's going to do 3 or 4 million.
And like you said, that number is very, very small, right? So if you say like 3 million is, you know, 3 million, even at the low. At the low point of that, you know, 3 million, that's what, 0.5% of the number of PlayStations in the wild. So it's going to be very, very hard for them to, I think, sell that, especially now with all this, with God of War going crazy. I think they said that it's going to be Sony's highest selling PlayStation 4 exclusive. And prior to that was like 21 million or something like that with the previous God of Wars. I don't think it's going to be, I have to agree with Paris. I don't think it's going to hit 3 or 4 million. I think maybe 1 million, 2 million max on this one. I mean, I played the demo a little bit. It's not bad. It's definitely different. It's almost kind of like a, you know, choose your own adventure type, high res, high definition type video game. It does cause some anxiety because, you know, you do kind of in the demo, like you're there in that same scene that we saw at E3 where you're the police officer, you're trying to save the child who's being kidnapped by I believe it's his father. It does play on some heartstrings. I've seen some people play through the demo on Twitch as well, and it's pretty anxiety ridden, and it's pretty cool. I just don't know if a title like this is going to hit that 3 to 4 million mark. That's really, I think it's going to be a stretch for it to hit. That'd be fantastic if it does, but I think it's going to be a little stretch.
And they're planning to sell this, what, $60?
Yeah, I think it's full price, $60.
Yeah, I don't know. By the way, you know, I know I sent a list to, you know, to the guys. We usually talk like the stuff that, you know, if we're going to make some changes and stuff. And I know once I sent the list, it was one news that people was like, that news is kind of, but there's a reason why I put this up, Pete. So I know I haven't had a chance to tell you why I put it up, but, you know, I know that a couple of days ago, Grand Theft Auto 4 just had an update, and a lot of the music from the soundtrack was removed from that game. So let's say you have, you know, Grand Theft Auto 4, you start playing it, and you notice that there's some songs that's missing. It's because, you know, Rockstar had a 10-year deal with some of the music labels and artists to have that song available in the game. But now, because of the update, it got removed and everything, right? So my question to you guys is, you know, let's say you guys bought a game that you love the soundtrack and everything, and, you know, you've been playing it a lot. Years from now, it gets updated and the song, some of the songs that you love from the game gets deleted. Will you be kind of mad about it? Or are you kind of like, okay, I mean, whatever. It's been over 10 years or what? Because it's like to me, I have Star Wars, right? Like, I love the movie Star Wars. I love like Back to the Future or stuff like that. Imagine having a movie from that, right? And I don't know where it gets updated and just get removed, like some of the songs from the soundtrack. I don't know how I will feel about that, man. That's kind of messed up. You know, now if they do a remaster like they did with Jet Grind Radio when it came out for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 at that time, there was some songs that wasn't available for that. That part I understand, but a game that you purchased a long time ago and then years later gets removed and you still have that game, I think it's just wrong in my opinion. But, you know, I just want to get your opinion about it before we move forward.
I don't think it's wrong. I mean, it's a license. I mean, they're bound now. The only way they can rip it off of your disc or base or prevent you from playing that is if you disconnect your network cable and you can't play that. You don't play that game online. You play that physically, you know, like you play it offline, basically. At that point, they can't pull and remove via update. You just have to remember next time you want to play Grand Theft Auto 5, you don't plug it in. You know what I mean? Because that's what prevents them. That's what prevents that off that patch from hitting. That'll pull off that music and insert new music, which is what happened on this one. But aside from that, I don't really play games that old that the license would have expired. So it really doesn't bother me. And I understand why they did it. Maybe I don't know if they expected that people would still be playing the game 10 years later. And that's pretty insane that it's been 10 years. And
yeah, time flew. Yo, that it flew, man.
Like, you know, but that was Grand Theft Auto 4. I'm curious what's going to happen with Grand Theft Auto 5 being their highest rated, highest sold title. You know, do they maybe extend that? Because it's going to be coming up on their 10-year anniversary soon.
But see, I don't see that with other games, though. Like, it's typically sports games, they have a lot of licensed music. And I don't see 2K or EA Sports doing updates that they remove the soundtrack, some of the songs from the soundtrack. I don't know. I just find it weird. I don't know why would they do that. I can understand if they're making a remastered brand new game to the next generation console. Yeah, I understand, you know, licensing and everything. They don't have the rights for that. Totally fine. But a game that you purchase and you purchase that package, 10 years later, they remove some of the parts from the package. I don't know. I'm kind of iffy about it. I don't know.
But you're buying the license to play the game, not the license to own the music. You don't own the music. You own the license to play the music within the game.
Paris,
and I don't think you don't even own the license at that point. I mean, this is, and that's, yeah, and that's up to, that's also up to the developer. Maybe EA has a much longer music licensing deal. And also, I mean, who's really playing Madden 10 years later?
You
know what I mean?
I think you still like, don't. Really, I think you don't really understand playing, what I'm trying, what I'm coming from though, man. But it's okay.
I don't know. Who's playing Madden 2008 right now?
It's not playing old games, Pete. What I'm saying is I purchase a game based on the package and then years later they remove some of the stuff from the game. That's kind of
you can play Madden. So let's use your Madden example. You can play Madden 2008. Just don't plug it in to get an update. And then you'll have your music.
Well, I don't know. Pete, Paris, you want to say anything, Paris, before we go forward?
Not really. Like, I just want us to move on. I think you're kind of beating a dead horse with this, because the thing about it, in today's digital society with music and the way licensing works, I'm not mad at this. I get it. It's just a part of the process. So if you have a game that's 10 years old and, you know, Rockstar/2K Take-Two doesn't want to pay the royalties for it anymore and they say, let's just remove it, then they do it. If you're going to sit there and complain about it 10 years later, that's on you. Don't plug your freaking network cord in. Done. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, we'll move forward. I don't want to say it. Let's move forward. All right, let's go on. Because I was going to say something about the music business, but I'm not going to say it. Whatever. Let's keep it moving. All right, so I know Paris, a couple minutes ago, he mentioned about, you know, it's a lot of PlayStation 4s. Now it says that 79 million PlayStation 4 shipped as of March 31st. Shipped, not sold, but it's a lot of ones that has been sold so far. But Sony predicts that they're going to ship 95 million units by March 2019. That's a huge jump from now to March 2019. Do you think they could pull it off?
Yeah, how is that a huge jump?
That's a huge jump.
24 million.
There's 75 million out there right now. So you're basically saying 20 million in the next year. I don't think that's crazy.
2 years. 2019. Yeah, 2 years. So that would be 24 million in the next 18 months?
20.
12 million?
75 to 95. That's 20.
I can see 10, 15, man. But, man, almost 30? That's a lot. I mean, I don't know.
Where's your math coming from? There's 75 million PlayStation 4s now. You're saying 95 a year from now. That's 20.
Yeah.
10 million
not
a year.
Not 30. 20.
Now you know what I'm saying. God, my math sucks. Yeah, 20. I can see 10, 15. So
10 million a year. But why not? I mean, how long has PlayStation 4 been around?
2013.
Okay. Right? And they sold 75 million in 4 years. They can't sell another 20.
Hold on a second, Pete. Remember, usually in the beginning of the life cycle of all the system, once it comes out,
this is shipped. Yeah. Shipped doesn't mean anything.
Shipped. This is not sold right here. But yeah, it makes sense in the beginning, a lot shipped, a lot, right? But then later on, it's going to slow down throughout the years. It's going to slow down once it gets, like, you know, the system is already older now. Maybe with the help of God of War and Spider-Man, maybe that's possible. That is going to sell a lot, but
keep throwing out those exclusive titles and absolutely they're going to sell a hell of a lot more.
That's the only way I can, but I mean,
but that you're answering your own question. That's exactly why they're not going to slow down shipping PlayStation 4s, because they're just now hitting their stride with their exclusive lineup, which will be a bigger incentive for people to go pick up a PlayStation that don't have one currently. So yeah, they're going to pump another 20 million PlayStation 4s into the system right now so that they're available, you know, when the holidays come up and into the spring when they have some of their bigger games. Because let's just break it down. Right now we got God of War. We know Spider-Man's coming. We know next year they're probably going to have Days Gone. And then probably next holiday is going to be The Last of Us 2. They're going to want to make sure that there's PlayStation 4s out there readily available for people to pick up. It just makes sense. I mean, by the time we get to the end of the PlayStation 4's life cycle, there will be well over 100 million PlayStation 4s out there in the wild. Just that's just math, just the way it's going to work, because it's clearly been the dominant console this generation, and it's only getting stronger, not weakening. It's actually getting stronger with their lineup right now. So they have all the momentum, and it just makes smart business sense to put more hardware out there into the wild.
Yeah, and there's titles that we haven't even talked about. Death Stranding. I mean, I know that's going to be a niche title, I think. It's still going to sell because there's a lot of people that are just anxious for that next game from him. So as long as Sony keeps throwing out those exclusives, there's no reason why I wouldn't be able to support. And again, that's shipped. We don't know if it's going to sell 95 million. Shipped is a totally different concept, but still, I don't see why it would be surprising that they'd be able to push out 10 per year. Absolutely. And again, now, pushing back against those exclusive titles, man, you keep giving the consumers reasons to buy a PlayStation 4 versus whether it be a Switch or an Xbox. Absolutely. If that's the only place that I'm going to be able to get those titles as a result, no problem.
Yeah. Now with all that stuff going on now with PlayStation 4, you know, the news is being shipped and all this stuff and their focus about next year. I just don't see them announcing a PlayStation 5 now in 2019 or 2020. I think maybe 3 years from now, I could see them making some announcements or something, or 2 years from now. But, dude, they're making so much money. What is the point of of announcing PlayStation 5 now at E3? It just doesn't
make sense. An announcement doesn't mean anything. I mean, they can announce it in 2019 and it's still not released until 2021.
Now, if they do announce it in let's say they announce it now, people are not going to buy a PlayStation 4. They're just going to wait until the next system. So, you know, Sony is going to be smart and they're not going to announce it now. Maybe 2020, I could see them making the tease. You hear the leaks and all that stuff, but too early, I think, man. Even the Xbox, for Xbox also, man. I think it's early for them too, man. But, all right, so we'll be right back. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be right back for more topics and also fan mail. We'll be right back.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Did any of you guys see the Shadow of the Tomb Raider trailer?
No, I did not see it. I know they had the event last week, and some people, you know, have had some comments about it. Again, I don't want to get too far into it because I'm not fully educated on it. So we're talking Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Did you get to see the trailer? Did you have any thoughts on it?
No, I haven't seen it yet, but I heard great things about it. I know we had a couple of friends that they were at the event, the review event and stuff. So, yeah. Looks good. So, I mean,
it looks. I saw the trailer this morning.
I've seen pictures.
I saw the trailer this morning. It looks really good. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm actually interested in playing it. I know I've said in the past that I think we've maybe gotten too much, you know, franchise fatigue with Lara Croft. I mean, because this game's been going. I mean, this is a title that's been around for years, right? Granted, what we see in that trailer, I don't think is gameplay at all. I think it even warns it at the bottom. You know, this is not in-game footage. And again, developers and publishers can make the greatest trailer, but the game can suck canal water. But the game looks very, very intriguing and interesting if you go just by the trailer. So mm-hmm. hopefully there's more to come, and hopefully, you know, hopefully it's reminiscent or it's close to what we see in the trailer. It's really, really exciting, and I like it. I like the direction.
Yeah, there's a rumor that there might be some two-player online co-op in the game.
I don't know
how I feel about that.
What, co-op?
Yeah, for Tomb Raider, for that particular game? I don't know. I'd rather play one player for that game.
And why is that? And why is that? Simply because of the setting, or you just think it's going to be difficult?
No, it's not the difficult part. I just don't feel it, man. I don't like when companies start adding multiplayer and all this stuff for certain games. Like, this game to me is a one player game. I don't see this as a multiplayer game. Even if it has co-op, I just don't, it's not for me, man. You know, I would rather play this just single player on my own, in my opinion. But I mean, is that going to make you want to buy the game because it has co-op? Not for me.
I think it adds to value for a consumer when you add a feature like that. I'm not saying multiplayer, I'm saying co-op, because co-op is a little bit different. Co-op gives you the opportunity to play side by side with somebody else within the same experience. I mean, I have Far Cry 5 on Xbox for that reason. I play Far Cry 5 on Xbox with a friend of mine, Funk. So, you know, it's a feature that will draw eyes at least towards that title. I don't recall if this is going to be any console exclusivity on this one. So that helps. I mean, we saw what happened when we played, what was that game on from EA, the escape game from EA, the one in prison.
A Way Out.
You and I played that, and that game was fun. And it's a co-op experience.
But see, that game makes sense to be co-op. That makes a lot of sense. Even Splinter Cell, I could see, you know, I could see that. You know, but Tomb Raider, when have we seen a Tomb Raider co-op game? I haven't really.
When have you seen a co-op Splinter Cell?
What are you talking about? There's modes that you could play co-op with. I'm just saying.
I think co-op is a cool thing. I like if you try to include co-op and try to bring that couch experience around. I think it's fun. It's a good selling point.
All right, so let's go with fan mail. It's time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right, so we have a couple questions and we have voicemails here. Paris, I know I sent you a couple voicemails, but I'm going to read an email first. Let me read this one right here. All right, this is from Justin. Shout out to him. Thanks for the email. This is a pretty good question, so I hope you're ready for this one, guys. So he said, hey, DTR, with the drop of J. Cole's new album, it got me thinking about hip-hop once again. I would love to hear your thoughts, J. Cole, as a hip-hop artist in general, somehow, but maybe a gaming podcast isn't the place for that. All I say is that I love the album. It's pretty cool. Been listening to this new album now for a couple of days, so it's pretty dope. I thought of an abstract gaming question. Hip-hop's four elements are emceeing, DJing, graffiti, and b-boying, and b-girl. If you could break down gaming into four distinct elements, what would it be? I had a hard time thinking of an answer myself, but I would love to hear you break it down. Thanks. That's a pretty, that's a really tough question. I know you guys wanted to, as hip-hop fans.
I don't know. First, I'll answer the J. Cole thing. I wasn't as impressed as I expected it to be. I was expecting more from more traditional J. Cole from like previous. The last three songs, I will say I dug. I enjoyed, especially the Addict. Mm-hmm. I like that one.
Cool.
But I don't know. I just felt it felt stale, in my personal opinion.
Okay.
Maybe then again, I'm not as big of a J. Cole fan as a lot of other people. I will say though that that track that he dropped last year, that was a subliminal diss towards Kanye, has a lot more credence now, especially over what's happened over the last week. As far as gaming though, I started thinking about this when the email came in a couple of days ago. the four elements I would have to say would be, you know, single player, co-op, multiplayer, and casual. I guess those for me would be the four distinct elements.
Okay. Will you add community in there too or no?
No, because that would be co-op slash multiplayer. Casual, in my eyes, is something like Candy Crush or Pokemon Go that you would, you know, that anybody could pick up and start playing on their mobile phone or what have you. And then, you know, the other three, you know, single player campaigns, co-op and multiplayer.
Okay. I was thinking of more of like, you know, graphics. I could put that as like graffiti, right? MCing, it could be like voice acting. That's what I think. Now with b-boying, I think that I could put that maybe as the way how you play the game, right? It could be mouse and keyboard, controllers and all that stuff, right? And I don't know, I could come up with another one. DJing. I know, Paris, if you could come up with anything too, you could mention it if you want. But I think that's the ones that I have so far, in my opinion. Is Paris on?
No, I'm here. Okay. Unlike you, I don't interrupt people when they're talking. So
first of all, I wasn't interrupting you, punk.
And right? You started the show by interrupting, so shut up.
I know, right?
So my four would be, first and foremost, would be story. I don't think you can have a compelling game unless it has a story to go with it. Second would be level design. Obviously, whatever environment, be it open world, be it a platformer, whatever the case may be, level design is going to be very important in that. Third would be visuals, just graphics. It doesn't have to be AAA. Oh my God, the latest. What is the new ray lighting or whatever the new hotness is? Night Rider Gray doesn't need to be, you know, on that level, 4K and all that kind of stuff, but it could be a simple 8-bit game, but just whatever graphically, visually that you're trying to display to your audience is going to be important as well. And then the fourth one is going to be, especially in the current digital age where we are with games, with it having DLC and continued support on games, is going to be communication between the community and the development team that's working on said game for future support. Like I said, be it DLC, be it a game breaking bug that they're going to need to fix. I mean, we've obviously seen a lot of chatter with that in the past year with games, you know, like Battlefront 2, obviously Destiny, you know, Division, just things of that nature where the communication between the development team and the community has been very important, you know, moving forward, you know, obviously with microtransactions and just other things that we've seen. Obviously, Fortnite, again, would be another great example of that, between Epic communicating with its community and on the fly being able to make changes to the game. Obviously, PUBG would be another one. So those would be my four, I think would be very important keys to a game.
Yeah. You know, that was a pretty good question, man. Very creative. Like that. All right, so Paris, I know we have a couple voicemails. I don't know if you want to play some of them.
What's up, GTR crew? This is Gianvito Toscano from Milan, Italy. And first and foremost, I wanted to thank you guys for inspiring me to start my own podcast with my friends. We're basically an Italian version of GTR, except we don't do fan mails because we ain't got no fans yet. But we are having a ton of fun, so thank you. Thank you guys for that. So my question for you would be, What if you were a game producer with an infinite kind of budget? And what kind of game would you make? And which studios would you put in charge of the project? And also, which music composer would you choose for the score? So this is my question for you guys. And thank you very much for everything you do. Keep up the great work and take care. Bye.
Hey, thank you for that voicemail. I really appreciate it. Great question. So if it was up to me, if I had an unlimited budget and I could do whatever I want, first and foremost, the studio I'm putting on is CD Projekt Red. That's just my default. because I think, you know, in the past 10 years, they've just done such an amazing job. Obviously, with The Witcher, we know Cyberpunk is coming. They would be my go-to studio. That's who I would want making my game. If I could have a music composer, I'm grabbing Marty, you know, formerly of Bungie. I just, hey, he's provided some of the most epic audio music cues in gaming that I've ever experienced, and as far as I know right now, he ain't doing nothing. So I bring him on in. He can be my new audio composer. The type of game I would want, I'm just a huge fan of the open world genre right now, being able to do whatever you want to do. I'm loving the co-op experiences that you can have in games right now, so I'd want something that was open world, fully co-op. And when I say co-op, not just two people, I would want it to be multiple people. Again, I'm thinking like something like a raid or something where, you know, you're having five or six people having to get together, work together to accomplish a specific goal. I would also want, you know, just random encounters out in the world where it's not just my group working together. I'm encountering other people out in this open world. You know, we decide to work together, things like that. I mean, I know obviously I'm pulling a lot from something like Destiny or Division. Obviously, like I said, bringing in CD Projekt Red, I would want their experience doing open world games. I would also maybe borrow something from Bethesda when it comes to the RPG elements as well. But if I had an unlimited budget and I could do whatever the hell I want, that's what I'm going to do. And then what kind of genre, or not genre, what kind of time period I'm going to put it in. I'm thinking I want to go more sci-fi. I'd want it to be have a sci-fi feel to it that isn't happening just on one planet. I'd want it happening throughout the galaxy, universe, or whatever, with just different environments that I'm experiencing and just, you know, all these crazy experiences. And like I said, I would want it to be. And I guess I would throw World of Warcraft in there as well. So I don't know how much I'm charging for this damn thing. But, you know, I would want it that, I mean, I'm encountering, just depending on the planet I'm going in, the area I'm going, I'm just encountering people from literally all over the world. We're all sharing this one gameplay experience together. And we all have to work together and experience it. So, I mean, I know I'm kind of all over the place with it. But if I was unlimited budget, I'd definitely try and do something like that, and I would try and expand it beyond anything that we've currently seen in gaming right now. And that would be my goal. I'd probably fail epically, but I got money, so whatever, I'd try.
Well, for me, I'm going to call my game Let Me Dream. Yes, it's going to be a fantasy world.
And it's going to be Xbox exclusive too, isn't it?
Xbox exclusive. So I'm gonna get Nintendo to work on this because they're pretty good. You know, I know everybody wants these graphic stuff, man. I'm gonna keep it simple, man. I want this to be a 16-bit tech graphics, 2D, right? 2D platform, right? I want that. Story. Who could I get for story, man? Yeah, I'll probably let Nintendo do all this stuff, but it will be me as a character, you know. Going to E3 every year thinking that some games are going to come out and then doesn't come out, you know, and it's like kind of have to like talk to people to see, investigate what's the next game, what's the next product they're going to announce at E3. And yeah, they're going to have multiple platforms, multiple consoles, four. I have to get four. No, I'm messing around. But anyways, I think I'll probably do that. I'll call it Let Me Dream and upgrade it every year based on E3 updates. That's what I'll do. Keep it simple. Paris named this like a kind of like a Destiny game. See, that's bootleg. Mine's is original. So make sure to buy mine's. It's only $4. Wow. Bucks.
I didn't know this was a freaking competition. Whatever. Just Pete.
Right. Pete, what about you, Pete?
All right. For me, I think story writing, I would probably want Neil Druckmann to do it. He's just been a phenomenal writer with every single title he's done. So you might as well, if I'm going to have the biggest budget, I'm going to pluck from the best. I think from a music, like a score composer, I would want like a combo of Hans Zimmer, Trent Reznor, and RZA.
Ooh,
I think soundtracks and music composition within games are one of the most important parts. And that's for me. Obviously, I can't speak for Danny or Paris or anybody else. And since, you know, this is, you know, infinite budget, I'm going all out. We saw what RZA has done in the past. We know Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails and movie scores. And, you know, Hans Zimmer is one of the best, right? you know, especially from like the Die Hard series and stuff like that. That being said, I think I'm going to go with, as Paris said, CDPR. They're the GOAT, you know, especially with large open world. I would want to do it some kind of sci-fi shooter based. I don't want to say space magic-y like Destiny, but definitely open world, probably closer to something akin to like Mass Effect 3 and how that game came about, because for me personally, I know this is probably going to be considered blasphemy for a lot of people, especially Paris. But for me, Mass Effect 3 was my favorite of the first, you know, of that franchise. So I would say, you know, that's where I would go, somewhere in that vein. I don't have a title.
I'm telling you guys, let me dream. Original title, man.
Good luck with that.
Hey, it's
four copies sold.
Four copies sold. Four. All right, next question, Paris.
Hey, guys, what's going on? Great work with the last couple of episodes. Super happy to hear some of the stuff that you guys have been talking about. This is Leo from Las Vegas, and I just wanted to throw this one at you guys. Since we're talking a lot about E3 lately, and I'm hearing everybody kind of hammering Microsoft about first-party lineups, what do you guys think happened, you know, when they were talking about Microsoft looking to make some major acquisitions back in February of this year? You know, we heard a lot of rumors about Steam. We heard some rumors about EA. We even heard PUBG. I mean, personally, I think that EA would have been the smart choice for them to go ahead and purchase. Not so much based on what Danny was saying, or what I believe Danny was saying about going ahead and making a lot of the sports games first party, but I think it would be a super smart idea for Microsoft if they were to go ahead and purchase EA. It makes the investors happy. Microsoft then from, they've got what, about half a dozen first party studios and about two dozen second party partners. If they made the EA acquisition, they would go ahead and have another half a dozen active EA studios and again about another dozen inactive studios that they could use at their disposal. So you're talking, you know, lock and stock, like every year they could potentially have two or three games lined up to come out through that new acquisition. Again, that's just me personally. I just thought it was kind of quiet since those rumors came out that we haven't heard anything. In my experience with business, that's usually because maybe like an NDA got signed or something to that effect. So just wondering what you guys thought, what happened to that rumor, why things got quiet. Thanks for listening, and keep the great work, guys.
All right. Again, thank you for that voicemail. Appreciate it. Another great question. I mean, the EA thing, I know, yeah, that was something that was being talked about, you know, a few months back, and it kind of went very quiet. In my personal opinion, I don't think it's going to happen, but you are right. In business, usually when a huge acquisition like that happens, it goes quiet, and then all of a sudden, it just happens. You know, I mean, you look at the Disney and the Fox deal that happened. We had no idea it was happening until it happened, and then boom, very quickly it happened. So I think if this were to happen, we'd start hearing about it again, and then very shortly after, you know, the ink would dry on the actual acquisition of it. But in my personal opinion, I don't think we're going to hear anything about that or see anything about that this year, if it happens at all, ever. I think PUBG is probably still on the table. I think that would be a more logical acquisition for them right now, even though Fortnite has kind of been eating their lunch and it's not as impactful as it would have been maybe, say, 6 months ago if they'd have made that acquisition. But I still think that IP is something that if they had exclusive to their console and the only place you could play it on a console is on Xbox, would be a huge win for them. Beyond that, I mean, I just think with Xbox, there's probably some studio acquisitions that they still need to make, just so that, I mean, again, just doing the PlayStation comparison, they have so many internal studios that are working on so many projects right now that they're just going to keep, whether they're a success or they're a failure, they're going to keep pumping out exclusive content, which is kind of the whole key to this console race, so to speak, is having compelling things that you can only play on that specific piece of hardware. And I mean, I'll just sidetrack and say this as far as with Xbox, because I was kind of talking about this or a meetup for Infinity War yesterday. They just need to lay out a roadmap for the next 2, maybe even 3 years and say, this is what we're working on. This is what you can expect in the future. And I know, Danny, you don't agree with the whole crickets. You talk about this and then it never happens for X amount of years. But I think Microsoft needs to do that because guess what? Sony did it and now it's starting to pay off. And we were aware of these titles and now we're actually starting to get them and people are excited for them. I think for this, the health of the Xbox brand at this E3, they need to talk about what they're working on. They need to say a Perfect Dark is coming, a Gears is coming, a couple new IPs are coming. Just announce them. Let us know they exist and they're working on, but also set realistic expectations that we may not see these things for a couple of years. You know, so people aren't expecting them to come this holiday or even in 2019. Maybe they're not coming till 2020. Maybe they're not coming to 2021, but we know they're coming. We know these are things that I can only play on your piece of hardware. And this is a compelling reason for me to want to actually purchase your hardware. Okay, I'm done.
My question to you guys, do you think that's a perfect place at E3 for Microsoft to announce we bought this company and it's only going to be available, like some of the games are only available on Xbox. Do you think that's a perfect place for them to do it at E3? Or you think on a
EA magnitude? Yes. If they were to quote unquote acquire EA, yeah, I'm announcing that at E3 because that is huge. And that's something that, you know, because we know the mainstream media is paying attention to E3 and they're going to have big announcements from E3 on CNN, the New York Times, etc. So if that's the case, hell yeah, I'm announcing that at E3 because you want the world to know about that. You want the average person that doesn't pay attention to E3 normally to know about something like that versus us who we're going to know if they just put out a press release, you know, on a random Friday, we're going to pay attention to that. Whereas the average consumer is not going to pay attention to stuff like that. So yeah, E3 is absolutely the platform where if you have a major studio acquisition announcement, you want to announce it there.
So I know last year, Microsoft, I think, went up with their press conference because usually it was like a certain amount. It was only maybe like 90 minutes or so. But I think last year, for the first time, it went up. The reason, like, it was longer last year. A little bit, not by much, though. But I know the reason why they started doing that is because back in the days, they had a contract to broadcast the press conference on TV. So they only had a certain amount of minutes, right? Now that people could watch this more than ever on Twitch, Mixer, and other streaming apps, I think that if they have a lot of announcements, they should just make it even longer than that. If, you know, because usually when we go to a PlayStation, not last year's, but I think previous years, it was like two and a half hours and stuff. So sometimes it's good. Sometimes it could be kind of boring in certain parts, you know, but I think if they have a lot of announcements and they also want to announce that, Paris, about, let's say, they bought a company or whatever, they could easily add that in there and make the press conference even longer, dude. You know what I'm saying? And just get everybody hype just back to back. Now, I know the caller said something about me talking about sports and all that stuff. I was talking about let the gaming sports side, let EA keep that and just have games like Anthem, Battlefield, like those type of games available on Xbox only. Like that's the conversation we were having if they purchase EA. That's what I was saying. Like get those developers like DICE and so on. You know, I never said anything about Microsoft having to keep all the sports games because honestly, they did that years ago back in the OG Xbox and it was a total failure. You know, the only thing that was cool, I think, was NFL Fever because they had the online leagues and everything, which was something totally new back in the days. I think that was the only thing that was really, really cool. But yeah, just want to say that very quick. It was called, I believe, XSN Sports, I think it was. Was it that, Paris? You
yes,
remember?
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there you go. Besides NFL Fever, what other stuff they had back then?
Lynx. It was, Lynx Golf was the freaking GOAT for XSN.
Yeah,
played
you know
that
what?
Thing every freaking night, man. Loved it.
That one also had online leagues, right?
Yep. Because I was in one. It was great.
Dope. See, that was ahead of... Yo, they were ahead of his time when with that stuff, man. So it was cool. All right. P, you want to say anything about this? Or just go to the next question, the final question.
I'll just leave it at, I mean, I don't see EA being purchased by Microsoft simply because that's, it almost seems as if EA wouldn't have had a choice in that situation, right? I mean, that's a lot of money. I also see an issue with licensing or market share trying to sell to multi-platforms, right? So if you've got Microsoft buying EA, would EA then be, would the EA titles then be limited, or would they do what they did with Mojang and Minecraft when they acquired Minecraft or Mojang, that they would allow multi-platform, right? And at that point, when and where do you sever the exclusivity for titles, because now it's a Microsoft product, you know, because now they're owned by Microsoft. So I just think that there's a lot of hoops, and I think that while EA would be the flashy buy, I think there would be a lot more confusion in the long run, because you would be trying to convert a company that has been always multi-platform and always serviced every platform to now, you know, you would have to have a pick and choose type of situation with what titles go to what platform, as opposed to forcing it to all go Microsoft, or just continue with the all, you know, all multi-platform variety of servings. So I think the EA thing was just a rumor. I think somebody just threw that out there just to see if it would stick. And I agree with Paris. I think the PUBG one makes sense. And I know that there's been flashes of communications of, oh, you know, Sony's talking to Bluehole or PUBG Corp in an attempt to try to get PUBG over there. And I think Microsoft, the smart move would be to go buy it. Would just go, you know what, we're just going to throw all the wallets at PUBG Corp and see if they can just acquire that title and that company as a whole, and just keep that close to its vest, have that be its battle royale offering to the community.
All right, let's go with the last question, and let's see that.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Sean from Miami. Listening for about like 2 years now, and it's my first time calling, but I just wanted to touch on the topic you guys were talking about on episode 753. I think you guys just were talking about, I believe that was the episode, you guys were talking about companies like playing, you know, like their E3 presentation compared to actual gameplay. I just wanted to let you guys know, Siege was absolutely nothing like it was in the E3 presentation. And if you guys go back and look at that, you guys understand what I'm saying. The game looks completely different. You're dropping out from helicopters and breaching into the house and stuff compared to what it is now. And, you know, Siege has actually turned out to be very, very successful. You know, granted, its presentation, it was nothing like its presentation. So, you know, I just wanted to go ahead and put in my two cents and, you know, just say that just because it's nothing like the presentation doesn't mean it can't be good. But yeah, I definitely understand that it's just part of the business. Thanks a lot, guys, for what you do, and you guys have a good one.
Thank you for the voicemail. So I'm trying to make sure I understand what the crux of what he's saying. Like he's talking about Rainbow Six Siege, I'm assuming here, and that basically the E3 presentation for it isn't what we got in the final game. If I'm understanding this correctly, common occurrence, happens all the time. We see that a lot with games where they give you the sizzle reel at the E3 press conferences. They, you know, they make it look super amazing. And then we actually talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And then by the time you actually get the game in your house and you play it, it's been changed or it's been downgraded in some way. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. So it's a common thing that happens. We see it a lot. It's why, in my opinion, unless it is actual 100% gameplay and someone that is not an employee, marketing or PR person of said publisher or studio is not the one playing it, then I may trust what I'm seeing. If it's just we're at E3 and it's just a demo I'm playing on the show floor and I'm playing it, I'll trust what I'm playing at that time. But even that could get changed. But when you see these things at the press conferences, they're just trying to show you something super amazing. Like one that just stands out to me right now is Watch Dogs, the original one. That ain't the damn game we got when it originally came out. You know, it got changed and these things happen. So I always take an E3 demo, take it with a grain of salt. Be cautionary with it because chances are it's not going to be the game that you play when you get it at home. Not always the case, but it does happen.
Yeah, I'm just waiting to see if Anthem is going to be the same exactly look as the one, the demo from last year that they showed. We'll see. That's a huge question mark on that one. But it looks good. It looks good. It got everybody hype, right? But, I mean, that's the goal when companies show these games, these demos, at their press conferences or at E3. They just want to get that big buzz. You know, they want to get that award, game of E3, all this stuff, right? But it's going to be pretty interesting to see the actual demo, because they said it's going to be available for hands-on, right, at EA Play. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens. Let's see what happens.
And that's what I will trust. The fact that it's hands-on, so that, you know, be it the media or just the public is actually playing the game themselves. I'm going to trust that versus someone standing on a stage showing me a pre-rendered video. You know what I'm saying? So that's, to me, those are the things that I believe in when I actually see someone playing the game versus just, you know, what Kaz Harai, as an example, I don't know, random name, is telling me on a stage, you know, about a game and just showing a video.
Mm-hmm. P, you want to say anything about
this? I think Anthem is a great example of something like that. I think The Division, I mean, as beautiful as that game looked when they first announced it and they showed it at E3 and things like that, what translated to what was on the console or the platform wasn't 100%. And we were talking about it earlier in the show, Shadow of the Tomb Raider. The sizzle reel that they put out the other day looks fantastic. Will that be what we're playing come launch day? And that's pretty much the crapshoot that you play every time you go to buy a title. You know, is it going to look exactly like that? And that's why I think unbiased, honest reviews of titles are very, very important. You know, that's what puts the onus and the responsibility on people like us who are in the industry that have the responsibility of playing these games and giving their honest feedback, hold the developers and publishers to task and say, hey, this isn't what you sold me. You sold me a fake, you know, box of goods here, and you got to keep them honest.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I agree. Head over to gamertagradio.com. You also can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. Make sure to subscribe, share with your friends, post a review if you can. And we'll be back this Wednesday night. Hopefully we'll have a live stream, and we have a brand new episode coming out this Thursday. So that's about it from me. Anything from you guys?
I would just say that I will not be on the Wednesday podcast for a while. I'm starting my new job as of tomorrow. And just because I know people are curious about what I'm doing, it is not in the gaming industry. I accepted a senior level position with Loan Depot. I'm still doing network security, and I'm working with their identity management team, and I'm helping architect some of that stuff. So I'm pretty excited about it. Like I said, I start tomorrow, so my 100% focus is going to be on my new job for a while. And just with that, probably going to be some long hours at work, which means I'm not going to be on the Wednesday podcast, because by the time I get home, I'm going to want to spend time with my family versus being on the podcast. So I'll still be on the Sunday stuff. That's not going to change. Until then, you know, like I said, let's give it, you know, probably a month or two. See how it works out, but probably won't be on the Wednesday shows for a while, but that could change. So it's TBD, but I'm excited about this new career. I shouldn't say new career path, but I'm excited about this new opportunity that I have in my career, and really looking forward to it. So that's it. Just wanted everyone to know that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to fully announce it until I was actually starting and I left my previous job. So it's all good now.
Cool, man. Now, congrats, Paris. We're proud of you, man. Congrats. Proud of you, man.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks.
Real cool. All right, but don't worry. I'll be here with Pete. Hopefully, he'll fix his computer by the time. Yeah,
that's what all this day is going to be dedicated to. So.
Yeah. Anything else, Pete, before we wrap it up?
That's about it. I just want to throw a real quick thing. I'll throw it in the chat for those that are watching. But for those that are listening, if you're a Fallout fan, there's a new mod coming out called Fallout Miami. throw that up on Google, take a gander. They just threw out the trailer for, it's like a teaser trailer, came out earlier this week, Fallout in Miami. It's actually, I'm still like not on the fence if this is an actual official Fallout release, like an official Bethesda mod, or if this is just a popular Fallout, you know, mod creator that has the name Fallout Miami. But it looks really, really cool, and it's set in Miami, obviously in the Fallout 4 world. Looks really, really dope. Check it out.
All right, guys, until next time, we're out. Peace. Later.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Thank you for listening to Gamertag Radio. If you'd like to donate and help us out for future events and more coverage and also better audio equipment, head over to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. Thank you.